Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It is the Steve Jones Show, the Friday edition, which really isn't that much different than any other of the weekday editions, except that it's Friday, and there's been a lot of stuff going on in the last 24 hours. I don't think I remember seeing an NFL draft that had more trades than what we saw last night. And the question that, as it was happening and going on, I had to ask is, why in the world did Cleveland move up one pick for a guy that the Vikings weren't even going to pick?
Because they were afraid somebody else was going to move up and take the pick, that's why.
And that's what I wondered, if they got a rumor or if they got whiff of somebody else making a deal, because, boy, did they give a lot up for Richardson to make sure they got who they wanted.
Well, did they give up a lot? I don't think they gave up a lot. I do not think they gave up a lot to get Richardson last night, because they did not give up 22 and they didn't give up 37. And their entire draft is based on 4, which became 3, 22, and 37.
Well, and then the second pick that they had later on ended up becoming a quarterback that makes your current quarterback viable for moving on. And they're already shopping him. The Eagles, one of the teams looking at McCoy right now.
You know what? Colt McCoy was not the issue in Cleveland. He was not the issue in Cleveland. So but they make this move, and they better be sure about Brandon Whedon, because there will be no break-in period at all. No break-in period, because he's going to be 29 years old in October. And by NFL standards, that is not young.
At least he's mature.
Yeah, but he better be good now.
Right.
They cannot afford to have him be good in his fourth year, because in his fourth year he'll be 33 years old.
But have you ever seen a first round that had more trades so early on as this one did last night?
No, but this is the collective bargaining agreement. This is the brand new collective bargaining agreement that was put into place. And that is what we saw last night, was the CBA allowing teams to trade up. I mean, the perfect example is New England. New England forever traded down, picked up multiple picks, kept everybody within the salary structure of the team. And thus they would get multiple picks further down the draft that you did not have to pay higher salaries to, but still get quality in those spots. And the Patriots perfected that for years after the 49ers had done that for years. Well, now there's a brand new CBA. Guess which team traded up and moved up? New England.
The team that never does that.
Tells you everything. That's the bell cow right there.
All right, I have to ask you this as I'm watching it. I was thinking about sending you a text again last night. The one text I did send you, I have to share, because I'm looking at this draft thinking I've never seen a draft move faster than the television coverage of the draft.
Right, right.
But the other one I was going to ask you is, what was the Jets pick about? I mean, did that surprise you?
Did it surprise me? I didn't like their pick.
Well, that's what I mean. Did it surprise you that they went that direction with a defensive end?
No, I thought they'd go for a defensive player.
And that defensive end.
But not that guy. Too inconsistent. Just like, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't have picked him. Poe from Memphis?
Right. Oh, yeah, there's some issues there.
I mean, let's see.
He's got a short attention span.
Yeah, and is not consistent. Those two guys are two of the more inconsistent. And, of course, what Seattle did was totally off the board. That was completely off anybody's reservation. I mean, even he called Seattle to make sure it was true.
Am I getting pranked here? Somebody did get pranked last night.
Yeah, a kid from Rutgers, which is that's yeah. sick.
It is. It is. But I thought this guy thought he was getting pranked when Seattle picked him.
Yeah. Now, when are we getting Joe Susan on today?
He should be here in the next few moments.
Once again, you arranged it. Okay. Let's see. Other
3:15.
Other Kevin Hurd topics today. We always like to let everybody know what is on the Kevin Hurd mind. Joe Susan on Bucknell spring practice. Perfect. Great guest. Can't wait to talk to Joe.
Super.
Packers and Eagles could get Colt McCoy. From Sealands Grove to Williamsport, pulses are racing over that topic.
Well, if it's the Eagles, Eagles fans are sure going to be interested in that.
Yes, they might be. Where do the Eagles, Steelers, Giants, Jets, and Skins go from here? How can we include the Ravens? No Ravens fans? I don't know what?
That might have been a Freudian omission there. Yeah. You've heard of Freudian slip. That's a Freudian omission.
Yeah. And Carl Crawford out 3 months in Boston. So when I go to Fenway next Saturday, I will not see Carl Crawford.
He was expected to come back mid-May to late May at the latest, and that all changed around. And that's an expensive guy. You talk about the Phillies with expensive guys on the bench. That's one.
$140 million right there. $20 million a year. But he comes back and say he contributes. It would be like a great pickup on July 31st.
Be like making a trade late, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how they have to at least approach it. But, yes, no Carl Crawford anytime soon for the Red Sox after his bang-up 255 year last year. So those are the Kevin Hurd topics of the day. And we're going to be talking a lot of draft here. The McCoy thing is interesting because McCoy is going to go someplace and be a very good backup quarterback for somebody.
Sure.
And the rest of the quarterbacks in this draft do not light me up. Nick Foles doesn't light me up. Brock Osweiler doesn't light me up. I like Kirk Cousins. And a guy I really like that scouts can't stand is Kellen Moore.
Why do you like him and why do the scouts dislike him?
They dislike him because of his height. They dislike because they think he's too thin and they don't think he has a strong arm. I will say this. When you are 51-3 and with a decent place kicker, you're 52-1, and you are throwing the ball as accurately as he throws the ball, with the pocket awareness that he has, in the seventh round, I'd roll the dice and say, you know, what do we have to lose with this? Because I've got a feeling Kellen Moore is not what the scouts have their own prototype. He may not be the prototype, but I think he can play quarterback.
Was the best move last night of all the trades that went on, was the best move the Philadelphia trade with Seattle to get Fletcher Cox, who was surprisingly still on the board?
No. I thought the best move of the night, that was one of the better ones, okay? Because Fletcher Cox is an excellent Eagles. That was an excellent pick. But I think the best move of the night I saw was actually New England moving up twice and then getting Dante Hightower and Chandler Jones. I got two great picks there for need. Now, the Cox move by Philadelphia was fabulous because I think Fletcher Cox is a great back. In fact, both the Steelers and the Eagles, both the Steelers did nothing and ended up with the guy that I'm not sure what took longer. For the Steelers to make the pick or for the NFL to put the DeCastro name in the back of the Steeler jersey. I think the latter took longer because as soon as the Steelers, you notice that the second they were up on the clock, the pick was in.
Well, they had to be sitting Joe there in the war room jumping up and down going, he's still there, he's still there.
Oh, sure. Of course, and that's between he and Pouncey. You know, we're going to be talking to Tony DeFazio from the Pittsburgh Sports Report at the bottom of the hour about the Steeler draft and what they did. But before we get there, We would like to bring in the outstanding head football coach at Bucknell, Joe Susan. Joe, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
And, you go through a...
I overhear you talking about the Steelers drafting offensive linemen, huh?
Yeah. I thought it was a great pick for them to get the kid out of Stanford. Yeah. You put he and Pouncey together, because I saw Pouncey play in person before, and Pouncey's can flat out play. So can his twin brother. That gives them a foundation, and if Alex Gilbert comes through for them, they may have a foundation of a good offensive line that could last them maybe 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, it plays into how they play football out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Downhill,
the way they want to run the ball, they want to run the ball downhill. They want to make sure they've got enough protection so that Roethlisberger's actually looking at receivers and not at the sky. So there's a lot of pluses to that. Let's get to your football team. You had some goals going into the spring, Joe. When you look at the goals that you had going in, were you able to, on a checkmark list, fulfill some of them and make yourself a better football team at the end?
I really think that we did, Steve. One of the things we wanted to make sure we did was find some replacements for some of the defensive kids that are graduating. You know, it's hard to do that because they brought so much to the table, but I think we'll be better in the secondary. I think we'll have a lot more depth in the secondary, which is critical, especially in this league when the ball goes up between 40 and 50 times a game. And obviously, an impact in the secondary is how well we play on the front, and we'll actually have some good depth there with the evolution of some of the younger kids like Demetrius Baldwin, and we actually moved a young man named Dylan McDonald from linebacker to defensive end, and our approach has always been we'd rather move kids forward than backwards, and it challenges people athletically, and Dylan really had a great spring for us. Offensively, we knew going in that we'd be light in the offensive line. We only had 7 kids, and I think that's consistent through this league. Fortunately, we finished with 7 kids, and
big. Yeah. I mean, that's big. You must have felt like you were getting some cohesion near the end with that group because you kept all 7 out there.
Exactly, and they stayed healthy. They obviously got a lot of reps. It's a tribute to Chad Rogaszewski, our offensive line coach, who really did a great job of making sure he was good with substitution. I think our center needed the work because he came in with a little extra weight, and by the end of the spring we had taken care of that. But it really, from a fundamental standpoint, really gave those kids an opportunity to grow as a group. And I think, as you were talking about with the Steelers, any good team is going to be based on the ability to stop the run, but also the ability to run the football. And that will be, we're a downhill team in all 3 phases, and that will be a trademark of what we do for however long I am here, and I hope to be here a long time.
Exactly. Part of that downhill approach was Charles Thompson. He ended up with 108 total yards in the game, 93 rushing and 15 receiving. In terms of his ability to read the blocks of the offensive line you're talking about and make plays for you, how did you feel about his spring and his performance in the spring game?
Well, there was a point in the spring where Charles has always had a great deal of talent. Charles was someone who was guilty of making too many moves. And at this level, in high school you get away with it. In this level they tackle you. And early in the spring he was doing that. He was making cuts that he didn't need to make. And we took him aside and told him that if this continues, your playbook will be a bunch of look cards. And Charles responded from the middle point of the spring through the spring game. Really became the type of back that I've always thought he would be. Downhill, very strong, and he really responded through the spring. What we did going into the spring is we knew we were going to limit Tyler Smith's repetitions. We feel strongly about what Tyler can do, and we wanted to put the weight on the shoulders of Jeremiah Young and Charles Thompson, because regardless of it looks like you have three, in a heartbeat, it could be down to one, and you better be able to trust that guy, especially with what we're doing in our run game.
Exactly. And I've seen so many running backs that one of the signs of maturity in them, Joe, and I'm not telling you anything, I'm talking to the audience, is there's so many young backs that I see that will try and make 10 moves and gain 4 yards, and then when they get older, they make two or three moves and they gain 20.
Exactly. And we feel this way, and it was something that we felt when we ran the ball well at Rutgers was the threes and fours in the first and second quarter change into the sixes and eights in the third quarter and might break out to be a 60 somewhere along the way. And we always accused Ray Rice of only having 59 as a limit. And the last game he played at Rutgers, he went 99 with one, so he proved us wrong.
And he's drawing checks in the big league. So
I was trying to explain my beautiful wife, Cindy, I was trying to explain to her he's going to have to settle for 7.7 this year. She goes, 7.7 what? I told her exactly 7.7. Can I just say I thank the women of our staff that to put up with what we do. Number one, to put up with us, and then to put up with what we do.
Right.
Takes special people.
Joe, I mean, look, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I may not recruit, but I'm I'm all over the map all the time.
The hard thing is when you get home, you expect you expect people to listen to you.
Yeah.
And it's not the case, believe me.
Well, I show up at this job and thought the same thing. right. That is the job.
Next to you.
Now imagine as fortunate as we feel, right, Joe? Imagine being Kevin Herr's wife. Okay. Well, Trey LaLetta, six different receivers in the blue orange game that he was able to complete passes to. He went 10-23 in that. Well, how do you feel about his feel for the game and his feel for the passing game that you have put in?
I think he's gotten a lot better. Trey in high school, it was a kid that the high school coaches used. He's a coach on the field, and at times when young men that have done so much with their high school offenses come to you, they think they have to think too much. And I know that part of Trey's transitional issues were that instead of reacting to coverage and throwing the ball where it's supposed to go, he tried to analyze it too much, and then the openings in high school aren't the openings in college. And the protection in high school isn't the protection in college.
Right.
So I think he made a big transition with that in changing from who he was in the fall to who he is in the spring. Same way with Brandon Wesley. Brandon.
Now this is your guy. Brandon Wesley's been your
guy. He's our guy, and tackle him if you can. You know, we put a force field around him in the spring for good reason. And
no kidding.
We've experimented with some of the things we'll do with him in the run game. He's gotten a lot more confident with that. He at times tries to throw with just his arm, and there's not many quarterbacks that have the strength that can do that. You mentioned one earlier here, Roethlisberger, but he could probably throw with his left hand too.
Right.
And with Brandon, the maturity that he's grown into in terms of he's now a quarterback, whereas in the past he's been a great athlete on the field, the 11th guy in the huddle. And in this offense, you have to be much more than the 11th guy in the huddle to function productively as a quarterback.
Is he becoming, Joe, an extension of you on the field? Does he now have that kind of feel? Because one of the important things a coach has to have with his quarterback is a key word called trust.
I think that he's getting closer to that. And I've told both of those guys, and I'll tell any of the quarterbacks that we recruit, we're going to be harder on you than any other position on the field because
Absolutely.
Of what we expect from you. And to whom much is given, much is expected. Brandon is much better with that. Whereas in the past, Brandon has a great personality because nothing phases him. Sometimes that's a fault when we want him to be phased. And I think he's understood that he's come a long way in terms of being a student of the game. As a freshman, he'd be the first to attest to that all he did was go out there and kind of run around. And I think he understands it more. We do a lot more with him in mind at the line of scrimmage, so that he has to make line of scrimmage decisions, both run and pass. And I think that's a challenge for kids transitioning from who they were in high school to who they are in college. It's just they think it looks easy, and then they get here, and it's a completely different language.
Have you seen, for example, when you decide to put the ball up with him, that the accuracy and the timing is better?
So much better. He and Mike O'Connor does a great job coaching him.
Yeah.
Brandon's issue in the past was he wouldn't use his body to complete his throws, and now he's stepping into it. And some of that has to do with protection. I think he has a lot more confidence in understanding the protections, understanding his sight lines within the protection. And we need to be able to challenge people with the vertical game. I think that'll help our run game. And even if they're not complete, as long as you're throwing them, people have to cover them. And I think Brandon understands that well, too. We're getting there in terms of the depth of our passing game and in terms of the volume of our passing game, and that is something that will continue to grow as he grows, as the quarterback position grows.
Success breeds success, and you have now, through hard work, and I mean hard work of you and your staff, which is now translated to hard work by your players, you've started to attain some success. Did you sense a little more confidence in the spring and how they attack things because they've had that confidence?
Very much so. And one of the biggest things you see, Steve, is that when we first got here, as kids would come off having run a play, you'd listen. I always listened to what they're talking about, and they were talking about calculus, chemistry.
Right.
Now they're talking about football. And what we tell them to do prior to every practice, we have a thought box that they drop everything that's bothering them in that thought box.
Right.
And while you're on the field, think about one thing, think about football. And the other thing that I think they've mastered, or getting closer to mastering, they're still 18 to 22 years old,
right,
is this play, just this play, not the last play where you either got burnt or you scored a touchdown, not two plays from now, what do I got to do on this play? And now that's not easy for them because it's not easy for us, too. You know, to live in the moment is something that'll make us a better football team.
Joe, in the locker room, you have a countdown clock. Where's the countdown clock right now?
Right now, I'd say it's 1:34.
See, that's what I love. He knows exactly where it's at on that countdown.
I can't give you the minutes and seconds. If you give me a little time, I will.
You'll figure it out, I'm sure.
I'm wearing one on my wrist, too, so...
Joe, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad it was a great spring for you because we're excited about what we think you can accomplish this upcoming season.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin. You guys have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend, too, Joe. Can't wait to talk to you again soon. Joe Susan, the outstanding football coach at Bucknell. We're coming up to the bottom of the hour. News on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Here at the Chateau, great to have you with us. And yes, down the road, Friday's going to get sponsored. Can't wait. Sunbury Motors, located 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Home of the new USFL franchise that we're campaigning for. We now bring in Tony DeFazio from the Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, great to have you with us. And I want to ask, what took longer last night for the Steelers? To get to the cards of the commissioner or to put the Castro's name in the back of a Steeler jersey? I have a feeling it was the latter.
Yeah, probably, and that's the perfect question, because they got the guy that they didn't think they were going to get. They you know, really seemed like they couldn't have been happier with the guy that they got. It's a guy that was expected to go, I guess, in the top 15 or so. And certainly the Steelers had a lot of needs to fill in this draft, offensive line, you know, chief among them. This was the guy. If you listen to what Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin said, there wasn't a whole lot of evaluation that went in, or, you know, I guess it was necessary for David DeCastro. They loved him from day one, and if he was available, they were going to take him, and there wasn't going to have to be a whole lot of conversation. And that's what happened. I would imagine the only guy in the Steelers' offices who might have been hoping some other team would have taken DeCastro would have been defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau, who is, I guess if there was a loser in this situation, he didn't get a defensive player. So that would be the only way to kind of put a loser on this situation. But at the same time, Dick LeBeau knows as well as anybody that a good offensive line is as good a defensive weapon as you can have. So I'm sure he's happy with the pick as well.
Yeah, they'll be keeping the ball a little bit longer and keeping his defense off the field. To put him in combination with Pouncey up front, this now appears to be the foundation going forward of what could be a long-term solid offensive line. This is their Alan Faneca.
Yeah, I think so. That's certainly the way they think about it, Steve. I mean, I think that's a great comparison, and that's certainly a pretty high bar. But at the same time, I think the Steelers are comfortable with comparing him to Faneca. They think they can plug him in there, and he's the starter for the better part of the next decade. You know, knock on wood. You know, of obviously injuries or something that you can't. That you can't predict, but everything other than that, it looks like this is exactly what they wanted. So, and you know, if Marcus Gilbert, the last year's number two pick, who had a pretty good rookie year despite a pretty significant shoulder injury, if he can work out on the outside, whether it ends up being left or right tackle, then maybe they have three guys to move forward with, and all of a sudden, offensive line goes from being a weakness to, dare I say, a strength on this team.
Stanford obviously has quality players. That's why they've been in BCS games the last 2 years. But they also play more of a Big Ten style, and they play more of a pro style than other teams. The fact that these guys and the DeCastro's coming out of a pro-style-oriented system, does that really enhance how the Steelers feel about them on the learning curve side?
It sounds like, you know, it sounds like it does. Kevin Colbert talked about that last night after they made the pick. You know, talked about when you watch Stanford's offense, you're watching a pro offense, and that he seems extremely comfortable in that style. You know, they acknowledge that it doesn't hurt to have the best quarterback in college football running the show for the past couple of years. That makes everybody else look better. But at the same time, this is a guy who certainly played a pretty big role in that offense looking good as well. But, yeah, you know, I think that whole learning curve thing is something that, again, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion with, because it was almost as if they watched this guy on film, they watched his games, and then they exchanged a glance, one of those knowing glances that said, okay, he answers this question, he answers this question. And certainly the learning curve is a big one. And, I, you know, again, I believe they checked that off with a pretty good amount of confidence.
Yeah, and the next part, too, is Stanford ran the ball far more often than people realize. Stanford actually was a very balanced football team. They probably have tape that can give them a great evaluation on everything, because Stanford is so balanced offensively. I think because Andrew Luck is there, there is a perception they were a pass-happy group. They were not. They were a 50-50 team.
And, you know, Steve, you can throw me into that group as well. It wasn't until late in the season last year when I started to watch them a little bit that you realized, wow, you know, they do run the ball, and you start to think, boy, you know, that maybe is another reason why Andrew Luck has had so much success, because exactly what you said, that's a balanced offense. And, you know, again, you can say what you want to say about Jim Harbaugh, but the guy knows how to run NFL offenses. He proved that last year in San Francisco, and I think he went a long way towards proving that, you know, with Stanford. And it's probably no surprise then that they are churning out players, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that are NFL ready.
You've given us the Steeler reaction to the pick and your personal reaction to the pick. What kind of reaction are you getting from the fans?
You know, the fans, you know, when you pick an offensive lineman in Pittsburgh, the fans are usually pretty happy with it. You know, especially over the last couple of years, there hasn't been a whole lot to complain about with the Pittsburgh Steelers team except for offensive line. You know, I mean, you watch Ben, you know, you can only watch Ben Roethlisberger peel himself off the carpet so many times before you say, geez, you know, yeah, maybe he does hold on to the ball a little bit long, but holy mackerel, can we keep this guy, you know, upright at least a couple of times a game? He doesn't have to run for his life every single snap, and I think that's what you saw, you know, so often over the past couple of years that, you know, in combination with fans loving smash-mouth football in Pittsburgh and watching their $100 million quarterback have to scrape himself off the turf so often, I think fans are pretty happy with this pick as well. I think today is going to be interesting because the fans do know that there are a lot of other positions to fill, and even though everybody seemed to like DeCastro, I think Pittsburgh Steelers fans it was a little bit troublesome for them to watch Dante Hightower go to the New England Patriots, of all teams. Probably a good pick for New England. He's a guy Steelers fans, I think, would have been happy with. You know, but there are some holes to fill, and so I think today you'll see the fans just as interested as they were yesterday. You know,
that brings up what was going to be my next question. Now we get to rounds 2 and 3 coming up this evening. Critical rounds for every team in the NFL. For the Steelers going forward, rounds 2 and 3, positionally, what do you think might happen?
You know, I think the positions that they had to identify as, you know, the biggest needs were offensive line, which obviously they filled, inside linebacker, which, you know, was a need anyway. Now that they've let James Ferrier go, it becomes an even more important position to fill, and nose tackle. You know, they've got two young defensive ends that they picked up over the past couple of years in the draft that have worked out well. Looks like Cameron Hayward is going to work out well, but they're going to miss Casey Hampton in the middle. And, you know, that's a tough position to find sometimes. It's tough to find. I guess there's not a whole lot of NFL quality nose tackles, but the plus side is sometimes you can grab those guys a little bit later. So I think those are probably the two biggest positions of need right now, inside linebacker and nose tackle. And again, you know, we talked about them having a lot of needs. They certainly need a running back, and that's something that wouldn't be a surprise if they went after a running back maybe in the third round or second round even. Wide receiver depth is out there as well. So, but despite the offensive needs, I do think right now, today, you have to look at inside linebacker and nose tackle.
6 of the 16 games that the Steelers play in the regular season will be against Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Cleveland. Baltimore did not pick last night. In fact, they decided to drop down in the draft. Bengals picked a couple times last night, and we know that the Browns picked twice last night. What did you think, let's start with Cincinnati, and what the Bengals were able to do, especially knowing that Dominic Brown and Mike Wallace from the outside, they went for a guy I'm very familiar with, and Dre Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, you know, I think that was, you know, exactly what you said. They're, you know, that's a smart move to try to compete with the Pittsburgh Steelers, compete with the offense that the Steelers are throwing at you. You know, they get a pretty good cover guy. I guess there were some questions about his 40 time, but, you know, again, that's just a number. The guy seems to have been a pretty darn good football player. I think that's probably the most important thing. I think they got a cover guy. And again, it addresses not only a need, but it addresses a need within the division, which is always, you know, always a good thing. So
yeah,
I think Cincinnati has to be pretty happy with what they did.
Yeah, and I'll give you a quick read on him because obviously I've seen him in person twice. And you can talk about his 40 time, but Tony, he closes, and his first step is really remarkably good. He has excellent instincts in that corner, knows how to use the boundary, and understands leverage on the corner. So that's something I think they ended up actually with a pretty good pick. I think he needs to put more muscle on, but still that's a good pick for Cincinnati. I think he'll help them a lot. The Browns.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, you know, just like you said, I think that that's, you know, the number thing is one thing. If he can play football, that's certainly a much bigger issue, and by all accounts, it sounds like he can. So, yeah, you know, I think they've improved. And they got a guard that the Steelers liked out of Wisconsin.
Yes.
Okay. Their second pick in the draft.
In fact, Zeitler, I voted first team All Big Ten.
That's how
highly I thought of Kevin Zeitler as a guard. I know that the center for Wisconsin is excellent. But every time I watch the Wisconsin tape, because I'll get a tape, Zeitler just really impressed me with how he played. I think that the pickup for Zeitler by Cincinnati was also a really good choice for them. And I actually had Zeitler rated higher than the center that so many people had it rated so highly. Okay. So that's just on a personal point of view. But that's, I mean, to me, voting him first team all Big Ten was maybe one of the easier picks I had to make. And now we get to
Cleveland. Yeah, I think that absolutely says a lot.
So. Yeah, and now we get to Cleveland. Cleveland, everyone knows, needs to revamp its offense. Everybody knows that, and obviously they do. People, for some odd reason, criticize the Richardson pick. I'm thinking to myself, are you insane? Watch him play. Because this guy can run between the tackles, has power, he's hard to bring down, can get to the edge, has the speed there, can return kickoffs, and has excellent hands. He is a very good receiver out of the backfield.
Well, this is another guy, Steve, that you've seen, you know, certainly firsthand a couple of times. You know, and I remember a couple of years ago when Penn State played down in Tuscaloosa, and I'm sure you remember this as well as anybody. You know, you thought Penn State might get a little bit of a break with Mark Ingram being out, and this guy showed to be every bit as good, probably a better, has developed into a better prospect certainly than even Ingram. So I love the pick. You know, did they need to give away what they gave away to get him? I guess that's probably the question. But, you know, by all accounts, this was the running back in this draft. And, you know, you don't get a home run hitter like this all the time. So, you know, I guess the Browns looked at it as you got to go ahead and take what you can get when you can get it. And they lose Peyton Hillis, but they've certainly upgraded that position. I don't think there's any question about that.
He'll be a better running back than Peyton Hillis. And Hillis is fine. I'm just saying Richardson, if he stays healthy, will be better. Brandon Wheaton. I know when we did our little mock draft yesterday, because, I mean, we had 2 hours to fill, so Brian and I filled it by doing a draft.
There you go.
So that's what we did. I had them going wide out at 22 with the idea they could get Wheaton at 37. Obviously, I think they got very concerned with all the trade activity that they might lose him. This means probably that Colt McCoy is, as Dick Girardi would say, gone. Your thoughts on getting a 28-year-old, soon to be in October, 29-year-old rookie quarterback that you can't, quote, develop?
Well, you know, I might be in the minority here. I don't know that Colt McCoy was the Browns' problem. You know, I've always felt like he maybe could have been a little bit more successful if he had a little bit more, you know, weapons around him. And I kind of feel like he's almost been made to be kind of a scapegoat in the Browns' offense. I certainly could be proven wrong. The Browns obviously disagree with me. I guess there's an upside and a downside to a 28-year-old, Steve. I mean, you know, I guess you can get a guy in who you know, perhaps he is going to be a little bit more mature and perhaps he's going to be a little bit able to decrease that learning curve a little bit. But you're right. Not a whole lot of time to develop him. In 3 years, he's going to be to the point where, you know, if he hasn't made it by then, he's not going to make it. And if they made that call on Colt McCoy, you know, I imagine that window's closing quicker on a guy like Brandon Wheaton. So I think it's an interesting pick. I look at it as kind of a gamble, to be honest with you. And I don't know that was, like I said, I could be in the minority. I didn't think Colt McCoy was necessarily the problem.
I agree with you. I mean, Colt McCoy was in his, what, second year? As a quarterback, in this league, it takes you a while to get settled in. I mean, we've talked about Ben Roethlisberger in winning the first Super Bowl. He was a game manager at that point.
Right.
Okay, the second Super Bowl, I mean, he was the man. But the first one, he was a game manager. In this league, you need a little bit of time. It wasn't like Colt McCoy was surrounded with America's best cast.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and the Browns have burned through quarterbacks in the past as well. I mean, you know, I don't know how good Brady Quinn could have or could not have been. He certainly didn't work out there. Was that his fault? You know what? There's a time I would have said yes. Now I start to scratch my head a little bit and wonder maybe it's not the quarterbacks. You know, maybe it's the way they cycle through them so quickly. So, you know, and again, you don't even have as much time with a Brandon Wheaton. So certainly the guy was a great quarterback in college, but you're right. You know, it's a whole different story, Steve, when you have an offense like Ben Roethlisberger had around him as a rookie compared to what they have around, what they've put around Colt McCoy the past couple of years.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Great to have him on board, and we'll have Tony on a few more times between now and the start of the season. We're looking forward to that. We'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK with Kevin Herentow after this.
Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza would like to give you some advice on your next used vehicle purchase. There are many dealers offering $2,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade, or a minimum of $3,000 for your clunker. Do you know what that means? It means these dealers are asking $3,000 too much for their vehicle. At Sunbury Motors, we have the lowest price promise on pre-owned vehicles. We research the market and make sure our prices are the lowest of any similar vehicle within a 50-mile radius from a franchise dealer. We also put our used vehicles through a stringent 135-point inspection, making sure you're getting a quality vehicle. So don't be fooled by the smoke and mirrors from these screaming dealers offering unrealistic trade offers. Visit Sunbury Motors online at www.sunburymotors.com, or better yet, come in and see that every pre-owned vehicle is clearly marked with our lowest price promise. Sunbury Motors, proudly serving Central PA for almost a century. And remember, always ask for a Carfax.
This is Hollywood, where anything can happen and the fun never ends. From over 60 world-class table games to more than 2,400 of the newest, hottest slots, and the kind of blockbuster winning you won't find anywhere else. Enjoy the award-winning Final Cut Steakhouse and a buffet that could only be called epic. There's fabulous entertainment and the heart-pounding thrills of live thoroughbred racing. It's the ultimate destination for fun seekers and big-time players alike, because there's no place like Hollywood Casino. Just minutes from Harrisburg and Hershey. Take I-81 to exit 80. Must be 21 or older to enter the casino or attend concert. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-565-2112 for help.
I'd like to thank Tony DeFazio from the Pittsburgh Sports Report for being on the show. A little bit in the next half hour, and then we'll open up the phone lines at 1-800-795-9565. We're going to open up the phone lines after we talk with Stephen Hill, the Penn State baseball pitcher and former Nittany Lion quarterback who threw a no-hitter and was the National Player of the Week. He was the National Pitcher of the Week. We'll have him on and talk to him for a few moments as Penn State gets ready for a three-game weekend series with Ohio State tonight. Bill O'Brien, in fact, is throwing out the ceremonial first pitch tonight. This has been a strong, strong half hour for you. I'm impressed.
Hey, you work with your strengths.
With what you brought to the table.
That's right. You work with your strengths every day.
What you have brought to the table in the last half hour, I think right now would wow the masses.
They're wowed, all right.
You have to be happy. That was a great pick by the Steelers.
I'm very happy. I mean, as a Steeler fan, I would like to have seen Hightower in a different uniform, especially not the Patriots uniform, but in a Steeler uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very good pick. A very versatile guy, can play guard, can play tackle. That's exactly what the Steelers need right now. Now, round two.
Not only that, here's the other part, though. Nobody talks about this part. Okay? There is, at Stanford, because of Andrew Luck, there is a misperception that they were a pass-happy, go-go-go team. Right?
Right.
That's what they do. They pass. No. They played far more like a Big Ten team than any team west of the Mississippi. Far more. They are as balanced an offense as you will see. They are pro style all the way and balanced. This kid has had to run and pass block. And Stanford had a downhill running attack.
But I think to come out and get a quality offensive lineman in the first round, let alone a guy that you thought would not be there. I mean, they had a lot of offensive linemen on their list, because they figured DeCastro wouldn't be there. And it's like I said earlier, they had to be jumping up and down in the war room. And like you said, I don't think it took them any time at all to put his name on the card and say, let's get going. Now what I'd like to see the Steelers do is look for that nose tackle, the nose guard, the defensive lineman position.
Well, he's not a nose guard. But if Devin still were available when they picked, they should jump all over him.
Yeah, I think they picked 24 in the second round,
yeah,
which is about the same spot they were last night.
Right. Which would be, 56? And I've got a feeling he will not be there at 56. But
you know, I, and a lot of people are talking, and a lot of experts are saying, well, that one of the needs is wide receiver. And that, I think, is everybody assuming because of Hines Ward leaving and Wallace being a restricted free agent, may not even be there for the start of the season because of a holdout or what have you, that they need a wide receiver. I really think they'll get the Wallace thing done. I don't think wide receiver is going to be a big priority here in the second round.
Not in the second round, but I pick a wide receiver here at some point.
Oh, I would too, and they've got plenty of picks.
And it has nothing to do with Mike Wallace. I don't think you sit there and that's not the issue here. Okay,
it's just not a priority.
You need wideouts. You need wideouts in this league. You need wideouts. This is a pass happy league. They're a member.
But when you have picks in round 4, 5, 6, 7, 7, 7, 7. You've got room to pick up a wide receiver. Now, it may not be, you know, your A-list wide receiver, but I think you can find somebody in those latter rounds and then be able to get that defensive lineman or a better cornerback and upgrade those positions on defense.
They're not going to get a corner.
At all? Or just not?
Wow. I don't think they're going to draft a corner.
I'd like to
see that. I'll tell you right now, you're not going to draft a safety. Because right now, after two picks, the safety well is dry.
Gone.
The safety well is dry, my man. Stephen Hill. Great personality. You're going to love him. He threw a no-hitter last week against Iowa. We'll talk to him after the top of the hour on WKOK. Coming up next, CBS News, then Sarah Bartlett.